Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. If I haven't said it before, you know what I'm going to say. A special guest for you, a very special guest. We're starting to get a little bit of attention here because I'm getting really cool guests, and this is a great guest. Very relevant, very timely to some things happening in our world, our country, our economy. Mr. Steve Dace is on the line with us, and he is a political commentator and has his own radio program. Steve, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, David. It's a pleasure to be on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. How many stations are you on now?
In fact, it's funny you should ask. We've only been doing this since December of 2011, so just about a year. We just landed our 54th affiliate today. We're actually going to debut live in New York City on the Salem Radio Network talk radio station there tonight, actually.
Outstanding. Well, congratulations on your success and rapid ascension into the ranks of radio titans. How's that?
Well, I appreciate that. That's very gracious. Thank you very
much.
This
feels like David and Goliath here. Okay. So, Steve, I mentioned you've obviously done radio. You are a conservative columnist and a media contributor, nationally syndicated radio host, as we talked about. You're on MSNBC, townhall.com, USA Today contributor. And you've written the book, We Won't Get Fooled Again, Where the Christian Right Went Wrong and How to Make America Right Again. And what brought you on the program today was to talk about this big topic of the freedom to work or right to work and the legislation that's going on and that whole movement. So again, welcome. Let's get into that. Where would you like to start? Because I know that's kind of a big topic.
Well, I think we need to make sure we are really careful about the usage of the word rights. I tell my audience all the time, David, anything that requires acquiescence or permission from another enterprise is not a right. Okay, so you don't have a right to get married because you can't just marry anybody you want. You don't have a right to have sex because you can't just have sex with anybody you want. I mean, there are people that do believe they can have sex with whoever they want, but they're called rapists and we put them in prison. Okay, so there are privileges and benefits and there are rights. You have a right to work, but that's not the same as a right to a job. Nobody is entitled to hire you, but you certainly ought to have the right to work where you are qualified and capable to maximize your earning potential if you would like.
Well said.
And unfortunately, we've had several states in our country that for too long have not offered that right. And if you look at the numbers, and I'm sure we'll get into that here during our conversation today, if you look at the numbers, and I'm a data guy, I mean, I have a strong belief system, but ultimately, I look at what the data actually says. And what the data actually says is that those of you that have been working in these forced union states are far worse off than those of us that have not.
And the natural question there, Steve, is people say, well, why is that? Why? What's wrong with the model? You know, if people are forced to join a union to work in certain states, what makes that a problem?
Well, the problem is, and this is where, again, when you have 50 years of one side being allowed unfettered access to indoctrinate our children in government schools, things that previous generations used to take for granted as that's just reality, we now argue about. For example, the natural laws of economics. I was on a show recently with a liberal host who said, well, I'd like to go back to the 1950s when the top marginal tax rates were 90% and union membership was at its highest. And I said, well, first of all, if those top marginal tax rates being that high were conducive to economic growth, then maybe you ought to check with your Democratic president, JFK, who, when he got in office, he slashed those rates. But secondly, I can give you billions of reasons why that won't work anymore, like 1 billion middle-class consumers in China that can buy widgets that couldn't 50 years ago.
Yeah.
A half a billion middle-class consumers in India that can buy widgets that couldn't 50 years ago. The fat corporations, if you continue to impose these restrictions on them, can just in 30 days move their operations to New York, Hong Kong, or Taiwan, never to be heard from again, and those jobs go with them. That didn't exist 50 years ago. Really, the United States was the industrialized nation on earth. We were still digging Western Europe out of World War II. So, first of all, the economic conditions are dramatically different in the 1950s than they were today. Today, there's far more global competition. So, actually, the natural laws of economics are more in play today than they were 50 years ago when the United States essentially had a monopoly on the industrialized West. I'd love to go back to that time period again, not 90% top marginal tax rates, but certainly where we are the lone superpower or lone middle class consumer purchasing force on the planet, but that is not the case anymore.
So, no, the fundamentals have changed.
Yes,
I mean, it's a fundamental shift.
And that means we have to really be careful about obeying the laws of economics. And the natural laws of economics say, anytime the state forces or compels the usage of something, service goes down and the cost goes up. We saw this in Massachusetts with Romney Care. We will see this after 2014 with Obamacare. We're seeing this with nations that have socialized medicine across the world. And you're seeing this in forced unionism states. When you force someone to join an organization, the opportunities decrease and costs go up. And as a result, the governments in those states until recently have been huge, yet the employment opportunities, not so much. Look what happens in these states. When the jobs dry up, people leave. Look at California. California is about a decade ahead of where Michigan would have gone had it not been for right to work. And in California, you have for the first time ever, I remember when I was a kid, I'm only 39, so it wasn't that long ago. When I was a kid, we moved out there for jobs and opportunity. Now, this past year's census estimate is that at least 100,000 people have left California. They're down 100,000 people from the last census estimate, and over half of those people have gone to Texas. Why? Well, in Texas, you're working for you. In California, you're working for the state. State employees make 30% more for the same job that is in the private sector. California's overtime pay for government employees exceeds that of the next seven largest states combined. And people can talk all they want about utopian schemes and we're going to share and spread the wealth. In the end, human nature takes over, and we have to acknowledge that human nature says, if I have an option to work for anybody else other than myself, I'm going to take that option. And that option for those people that are leaving California, those options are in places like Texas, which, by the way, is a right-to-work state.
Well, Steve, I think we've gotten people's attention about this issue, and I'm going to ask you to take a breather, take a second. We're going to go to a break. Steve Dace is with us, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to come right back. Stay right there.
What's your dream? Play golf every day of the week? Turn that hobby into a new career? With careful planning, you can make it happen. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your no-obligation consultation. At Holland Financial, we want to help you take the first step towards making your dreams a reality. That number again is 888-747-7526.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Steve Dace is our energetic guest today, excited and fired up about what's happening with right to work and really about some of the basic things that underlie how America's built, what America's about, what we're, our economic system's about. And Steve, we're talking before the break about, you know, some of the different successes of states with or without right to work. And again, basically this whole right to work argument or issue is whether or not a state allows the union and the employer to get together and decide before somebody's hired or even after if they are required to join a union in order to have a job. Is that basically the issue?
Yes, that is the issue. And I should tell your audience, David, I mean, I grew up in a Teamsters household. In fact, I'm still a Teamster in good standing. I worked at the first ever computer automated UPS plant, which was in my old hometown of Grand Rapids, Michigan. I worked there through college. I made sure to leave there as a member in good standing with all my dues paid. The union did a good job for me. It was still, in terms of the amount of compensation I received for the time I worked, it was the best-paying job I've had in my life, except for the one I have right now. So I think unions, are, while imperfect, we know some of the sordid history there, but corporations certainly have more than their share, too. I think unions have been, in our history, an imperfect but necessary model against corporatism. One of the reasons that communism, the Red Scares here, were never as prevalent in the United States as they were in some other European nations is because we invented a mechanism that Marx never foresaw, which was collective bargaining. And so that gave us a chance to have a check and balance on corporatism. And I'm all for checks and balances because I don't trust human nature. But there's a difference between a union representing the best interest of its workers and unionism. And that's what we're seeing now.
Yeah, and this is the key, Steve. It's not that you or I or somebody per se is against the unions. It's just that the forced joining of the union, that's really the heart of it, isn't it?
It is. And a lot of this comes out of the public sector unions, where the real leftists are. A lot of the people that are machinists or auto workers, those are just the folks that play on the same Little League team as your kids do and live next door to you. The real progressive leftists, where they're really against what America stands for, you're going to find those people in the public sector unions, the AFSCMEs, the AFTs, the NEAs. That's when they get together at their conventions and they come up with all sorts of new ways to steal everybody's freedom and liberty. And that is a cultural mindset where it becomes about serving the union, not you, where you might be a conservative teacher, but you keep your mouth shut and pay the union dues because it's what's best for the culture. You know, we have a word for that. When you set aside your own value system, what's in your own best interests, in order to serve a group that may not be serving you. We used to call those people cults. And in many cases, that's what we're talking about here. It's almost a groupthink. The only thing we're missing is some Kool-Aid. And look at what happened with, and a great example is what happened with Hostess. Those people decided in order to support the union, they would forsake their own jobs. Now he doesn't have a job. And that's what I'm talking about. Where you serve them, they don't serve you.
Well, and the bottom line for people, and you know, it's never been a more important time for our country for people to be able to have jobs and get new jobs and work their way up the what we hope is this American dream ladder, and this debate argument over the right to work without being forced to join the union should be the full title of this argument. It's really a challenging thing for our country. Now, is it fair to say, Steve, that the momentum is building toward the right to work states? It's 20-some states now, 26 states, is that correct?
Yes, it's 26, and the answer to that question is yes. And what happened in Indiana gave cause to what happened in Michigan, which is why I think you'll see it looked at in Ohio and in Wisconsin. If you look at all those Rust Belt states, David, I went back to 1990. That's the earliest I could find reliable government data without busting out the microfiche, okay? And if you go back to 1990, you'll find that all of those previously forced union Rust Belt states, not a single one of them have ranked in the top 20 nationally in per capita personal income. Now, only Michigan did once, and that was in 1990. Wisconsin did once in 1998 and 1999. Ohio and the rest of them never have. In fact, Michigan's only been in the top 30 in per capita personal income once since 2004. Michigan went through 20 consecutive months with 12% or higher unemployment. You just cannot sustain that business model. And what happens is, again, just like workers are leaving California in droves, companies left these states in droves to go where it was cheaper for them to do business. Now, the unionist will say, well, yeah, so they go to those southern states, and what they pay those people is dog meat compared to what they pay everybody else. Well, first of all, you don't have a job. Any salary is good, number one. But number two, that's not true either. The data shows in right-to-work states, personal income grew by about 29% since 1999. And in non-right-to-work states, it's grown about 15%. So the ratio is actually 2-1.
Let me ask, it's interesting to note, I got on the internet while we were talking, Steve, and I'm looking at Wikipedia, which of course you always had to do your fact checking in Wikipedia, but I'm looking at a map of the states that are right to work, and very quickly it looks a whole lot familiar to kind of the red versus blue state, with the red states being the right to work states. Is that a trend we probably can expect to see continue?
Yeah, but I think it goes deeper than that. I think it's demographics, I think it's weather. And the taxes there are lower. CNBC did a survey last year, top 10 places to own a business and raise a family. 9 of the top 10, including Texas, which was number one, 9 of the top 10 are right-to-work states. So it only makes sense, David, if there's more jobs, that means there's more opportunity. Mm-hmm. That means you need more employees. More employees means there's more competition for human resources. And how do businesses compete for those workers? They offer better jobs and better benefits. And that's why salaries are at personal incomes gaining in right-to-work states when it's not gaining in non-right-to-work states.
Steve Dace is our guest today, ladies and gentlemen. And the website, Steve Dace, you got to put an E in there, though. So it's Steve and then DEACE.com, SteveDace.com. And our subject, of course, is Freedom to Work, Right to Work. And the book Steve wrote is We Won't Get Fooled Again, Where the Christian Right Went Wrong and How to Make America Right Again. So stay right there. We're going to take a short break.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Steve Dace is our guest, passionate about his position and analysis on the right to work state issue or argument. And I wanted to get into a couple other topics with us, or a little bit some of these specific things, Steve. One of the things I think that people naturally think about when you see legislation that is passed, you know, where it becomes a state law, Florida, if Wikipedia is correct, it's been in our Constitution since 1968. But a lot of these states are taking this up as new legislation to pass it as a new law. What happens in those states where you have unions already? How does this affect them?
Well, it depends on the kind of union. I mean, if you are a forced unionism state, particularly with huge government workers, and you are using the state as a way to conscript employees into joining your union, essentially we're talking about a draft, it busts them.
Okay, so this actually will, there's no grandfathering in is my question. It busts up that requirement.
Well, it's a state-by-state case.
Okay.
Wisconsin was facing fiscal annihilation. And so Scott Walker played hardball with them. In fact, before he did that, he tried to negotiate with them several times. They chose not to negotiate. They decided to play hardball with him, so he took his case to the people. So did they. They tried to recall the legislature that one year, then they tried to recall him the next. They lost both times. And so they, instead of negotiating, instead of saying, hey, we can do something about the rising cost and escalating cost of state government, they went for broke and they lost. And now they're facing being busted as a result.
Not a grandfather clause deal. So when states do this, it could, because of some of the things you talked about before the break, about the economic impact of states being right to work or having the option to work without joining the union, that some of these states that may be facing difficulty, like Michigan, you mentioned, that they may be on the path to being California. So this could very significantly, potentially, turn them around, if you will?
Yeah. I mean, the biggest cost any government has, really the biggest cost any enterprise has is what, David?
Labor.
Labor. I mean, mm-hmm. That's just true. I mean, there's a reason why you get your car fixed. It's parts and labor. So the human resource is the greatest cost. And when California has something like 245,000 state employees, that's going to be your biggest cost. And that's the same thing in my home state where I live in Iowa. That's the same thing in your state of Florida, especially in states, by the way, like mine, which are already heavily subsidized. I mean, 2/3 of my state budget every year goes to education, so there's huge union dollars there. And then you look at how many elderly we have in our state with Medicare and everything else. You have a state with a high elderly population. You're going to have people that are going to have to run those retirement funds for state employees, which are going to be bigger in those kinds of states. So, yeah, I mean, you're looking at human resources are always the biggest cost, always.
Well, I guess the other question I think we can get to, and then we'll take another quick break, Steve, is, and I think it's kind of an obvious thing, this is something that could continue on. More states, again, we're not against unions, this is the forced or required joining of the union to get the job. So should more states implement the right to work?
I think eventually you'll face an economic reality. Well, they'll have to
okay.
if they want to compete. I mean, that's just going to be the economic.
Well, especially with the global overlay that you mentioned. You know, once you consider what's going on around the world, we're not just competing. Texas isn't competing against Michigan or Florida against California. I mean, Florida is competing with India.
Same thing with farmers in my state. They're not just competing with farmers anymore in Nebraska. They're competing with farmers on a global scale. So, yes. We're going to have to, and the problem is some of these moments will be rather draconian shifts because for too long we've lived on a gravy train that cannot be perpetuated, and we've sort of been engaging in magical thinking, and reality is going to bite hard in the short run for some of these states, but in the long run, as you've seen in Texas, for example, you will see that it's a long overdue move, but there's certainly going to be a cost, David, for attempting to kick the can down the road for decades and live outside the economic realities of the planet.
Got it. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Last one, Steve Dace is our guest. SteveDace.com, DEACE for Dace, and we're going to be right back.
Creating a world with less cancer takes a team effort. It takes survivors and caregivers and regular folks like you and me who all unite at Relay for Life. This year, nearly 4 million people nationwide will come together to celebrate, remember, and fight back. We're the American Cancer Society, the official sponsor of birthdays. Visit us at relayforlife.org.
All right, we are back with Steve Dace and the website stevedace.com and the book, We Won't Get Fooled Again, Where the Christian Right Went Wrong and How to Make America Right Again. Steve, I saved the best for last. This will probably put you over the edge. You ready?
Sure.
All right. So how does this movement with the right to work and more states now up to 26 passing this legislation and you're expecting there to be more, how does that impact our whole political landscape? And of course, with the current administration, Mr. Obama and his team, how does this affect... I guess what I want to say is how do they view it, I guess? How does Mr. Obama view this, or how does this get into the mix of our whole political discord?
Well, David, I'm a big sports fan, and any fan of college football or basketball will tell you that recruiting is the lifeblood of any program. The ability to procure and acquire the next generation or the next ring of talent after one class moves on. And this has been this government forced unionism of government and sector employee unions has essentially been one of the biggest fundraisers and procurement of new talent raisers and grassroots raisers the Democrat Party has had. The forced unionism folks have been the biggest fundraising rail of the left for the last couple of decades. So the impact of this in a state like Wisconsin, I think I read that the average union dues of a government sector employee worker in Wisconsin were about $1,800, I think is what it was on an annual basis. You get rid of, let's say there's 20,000 less government sector employee union workers in Wisconsin who either leave the state or go get jobs in the private sector. Multiply a nice round number of 1,500 times 20,000, and you start realizing the amount of money that the unions could be missing out on. That might be enough to buy them the Wisconsin state legislature in the next election. So we're talking about huge political stakes here.
So this could have a huge impact on fundraising, and really, this is a big deal.
It is. And frankly, some Republicans who are not in favor of free markets and are really in favor of crony capitalism, they've only been fighting against forced unionization, not because they believe in the principle, but because they want to defund the fundraising mechanism stream of the Democrat Party. That's a secondary benefit. To me, the biggest benefit is to those workers. Anytime the people screaming fairness get control of the system, those people, those middle-class people, are always the hardest hit, David. We've seen this forever in human history because there's no such thing as fairness. There's only freedom and competition that generates fairness by giving everybody an equal opportunity to maximize their God-given abilities. And forced union states have been essentially neglecting their people from that opportunity for the last few decades.
Amen. Steve, we're out of time. Steve Dace is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. Website, stevedace.com. Steve, thanks for being on the program. We'll have to have you back.
Thank you, David.
All right.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland, and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.